Here next to present Navigating Blindness through Bosma Enterprises for the Blind, our good friend and colleague, James Michaels and Jeff Mittman. Okay, I'm not that short, Ron. Okay. All right, is it coming through okay, folks?
Not really, Ron.
No? Okay, let me.
Might have to take it out and bite it.
I will take it out. All right, is that better?
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you, Ron, and all the folks here from the National Federation of the Blind for letting us come and speak for a few minutes here. I do want to say I do know Miss Tina Skills from NAPSE. And the first time I met her about 4 years ago, she gave a piece of chocolate to my guide dog. Oh, yeah, she did. She says it was an accident, but I'm just going to tell the folks in the room, if you got a guide dog, shake her hand first, make sure there's no chocolate in there. So that's... but I've been in other meetings with her since then, and she has not fed my dog chocolate, which I'm very thankful of. So, okay. All right. I know a lot of the folks in this room. I have a lot of friends and colleagues in here, but I'll just tell you a little bit about myself. I've been working in the field of disabilities now for 30 years, which I know that's surprising for those of you who can see. I look much younger than 30 years old even, so yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, there'll be a little something extra for you after the show here. Yeah. but at any rate, I started working at the Indiana School for the Blind. And I worked there for 10 years in residential services. And then after that, I moved on to the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired, where I worked as a psychiatric social services specialist, which is a big fancy word for school social worker. And then after I did that, I worked for the state of Indiana's Blind and Visually Impaired Services as the counselor at the Rehabilitation Center. And from that point, I've been at Bosma Enterprises for the last 15 years or so, and started out as a counseling services manager, and now I've been fortunate enough to be in the position of vice president of program services. A little bit about my vision loss. I am a person who's visually impaired. I've got a condition called rod cone dystrophy, and it's a congenital condition, so it's the older I get, the more that my vision, well, the worse my vision gets. So it's a retinal degenerative disease. And I started having significant difficulties with my vision probably in my late 20s, early 30s. I'll never forget it. I was riding a dirt bike. I had dirt bikes ever since I was a young kid. And in the summers, I lived in Indianapolis, but my dad lived in Centerville, Indiana. And I'd go back, and that's where I kept my dirt bike. And it was a 175 Kawasaki. I love that dirt bike. And so after the year went by, it starts warming up, and I went out there, fired up the motorcycle, got on it, started riding it, giving it everything it had, and next thing I know, I can't see the fences around me. So I'm like, uh-oh, okay, it's time to slow it down, ease up. And I turned it around, went back to the barn, kicked it off, and decided it's time to sell that bad boy. And so... So it was probably 4 or 5 years after that, it got to the point where I had to start using a white cane. And now, as you know, I have a guide dog that Tina feeds chocolate to. So right now I describe my vision as if you looking through a window about the size of a football, and it's really cloudy and smudge prints all over that window. That's about how I see right now. Very, very limited vision, no real functional vision at all, just more, I'd say just a little better than light perception. So anyway, that's a little bit about me and about Bosma. Just real quickly, we are a not-for-profit 501c3 company. We've been in existence now for a little over 100 years, and we have over 200 people working at Bosma. About 114 of those folks are blind or visually impaired in all different areas of the company. And as of Monday, we're going to be about 115 people who are blind or visually impaired because Miss Micah Ball is going to be our new youth coordinator. So let's hear from Micah. There you go, Micah. I spilled the beans. So anyway, I hope you told the school for the blind that, by the way. Yeah. Okay, good. Public knowledge. Very good. So we'll be very happy to have Micah on board. And for me, though, I oversee the programs area, and we have several different programs at BOSMA. We served last year 766 people in the state of Indiana, and we took over 700 information referral calls. And really, the majority of the folks that we served last year were senior citizens coping with vision loss. And, you know, our goal is that if senior citizens who are dealing with vision loss and they want to remain in place in the homes where they raise their families, and they want to stay in that place, then vision loss should not be the reason that they leave their homes. So we want to keep people in place, and we have our programs, our itinerant rehabilitation teaching program. They go out and they work with people in their homes and help them to remain as independent as possible. And then we have our center-based program, and that's where we work with people who have who maybe have a higher education, educational goal. Used to be a homemaker goal as well until some changes with the Workforce Investment Opportunities Act and the vocational rehabilitation had kind of changed the way that they serve Hoosiers in that regard. So, well, not only Hoosiers, but all people with disabilities. So, but we have a center, and last year we served about 50 people in our rehabilitation center in the full program. And in that program, people stay probably about 4 to 5 months and get skills that help them be ready for higher education or employment. And then in our community placement program, that's where we help people find jobs around the city of Indianapolis and the surrounding counties. Last year, we helped 26 people find jobs in the state of Indiana, so we're very proud of that. As you know, the unemployment rate's really crazy high, as Tina had talked about, and we're trying to do whatever we can to help improve that. Now, Ron asked me to talk about some of our new programs and some things that we're doing right now. One of the things I want to talk about is the Salesforce Administrator Training class that we have recently started. And I've got this goal, and I know we were talking earlier that, you know, I look like I'm probably about 25 or so. But maybe it was me that was talking about that, yeah. At any rate, but I'm actually going to be 55 this month, which is crazy. Time is flying by. And there's a chance I'll retire in 10 years. So I have this, what they call a BHAG. Does anybody know what a BHAG is? What was that? Somebody said something close. What'd you say? Bodacious. Well, you're close. I think you're on the right track. A BHAG is a big, hairy, audacious goal. And that's what I have. My BHAG is, and that's, don't you even think about saying anything about my wife, guys. I know what you're thinking over there. Yes. So I'm hearing some things over here. But at any rate, my big, hairy, audacious goal is that in the next 10 years, we're going to, as a community, all of us, we're going to cut that employment rate in half. You know, right now in the state of Indiana, there's about 62% of the folks who are blind or visually impaired who are unemployed. That's folks who are of working age. I believe if we work together, the National Federation of the Blind, the BOSMAs, all of us together, I believe we can get that down. And one of the ways to do that, I believe there are a couple different ways. One is to educate employers, help them to see the abilities of people who are blind or visually impaired. And the other way is to get people who are visually impaired as highly trained as possible and to look at different jobs out there where there are a lot of jobs. So one of the things that we have done is we have started the Salesforce Administrator Training class. And Salesforce, what Salesforce is, I know you probably hear a little bit about them. They've got the big Salesforce Tower here in downtown Indianapolis. And Salesforce is a big database system where they manage data in the cloud, And so I think everybody knows what the cloud is. It's not just the up there in the sky with the big, the big white fuzzy things. But it's they're managing data in the cloud, and Salesforce has become a really, really big nationwide company. Last year, over 150,000 businesses utilized Salesforce as their database program. And when you look at that, of 150,000 businesses, about 3.5 million users out there who utilize Salesforce in their day-to-day businesses. So what they need for these companies need is they need Salesforce administrators, people who work in the IT departments to help those folks manage that data, get the reports out, make sure there's not duplications, create dashboards. And the big thing is, when we're in our businesses, Ron with his business, whether it's the orientation mobility business or your vending business, you want to know the information that's in there. You want to know your inventory. You want to know the data. You've got to be able to see what's selling and what's not. And you want to be able to get that data out there. So Salesforce, it's a very accessible program. And we learned that about 4 years ago because Bosma now is a Salesforce company. So we utilize Salesforce, and we have two Salesforce administrators that work at our company. So we started looking at this, and we realized that last year alone, there was over 4,000 created Salesforce administrator positions out there, and it's a relatively new position. And there are lots of companies that need Salesforce administrators. So what we've done is we have we worked with Adam Rodenbeck, who works at Salesforce. I think a lot of you know Adam Rodenbeck. He's visually impaired himself, a programmer. Yeah, he's an awesome guy. Actually just moved to San Francisco, so now he's a trader in that regard. But other than that, we love him. And he helped us get this going. And we also hired two blind veterans who are Salesforce administrators as our instructors. So we've developed a 16-week training class, and it's all done online through Adobe Connect. It's the classroom setting, and we are now training people to become Salesforce administrators. We had our first class that started in February of this past year, and we had six people who started out in the class, all of whom were visually impaired. We have three JAWS users and three Zoom Text users. And by the way, both of our veterans, one is a Zoom Text user and one is a JAWS user for our instructors, which is helpful. So at the end of it, and it's a tough class, let me tell you folks, it's a really tough class. And it's 4 hours a day, 5 days a week, and then there's homework afterwards. But so we ended up graduating, four people graduated, four people made it through. And of those four, by August, three of the four had already passed their national certification. It's an industry-level certification to become Salesforce administrators. So three of those four folks are currently working in internships, and the other person is still working towards getting their certification. So it's a great opportunity. If you go to Indeed.com anytime, you'll see that there are over 2,000 listings for companies that need Salesforce administrators. So we are trying to find jobs that are a little more high-tech. If you're somebody who is very good with a computer and you're interested in looking into this training class, I'm going to leave some business cards at the back of the room here, and I'll be hanging around a bit afterwards, too, if you want to talk a little more about it. We are looking for students. We just started our second class here on October 8th. And we have six students in that class, and we're really excited about it and hope it's something that's going to create really good jobs for folks. You know what the average salary was for folks who are Salesforce administrators who started in those 4,000 jobs I talked about earlier? Very close, $95,000.
Wow.
Yeah, that's the average salary. So, we could almost be as rich as Ron Brown here if we really look at that. Yeah, that's almost. If we get that job. Now, you have to be a really good computer user, though, folks, let me tell you. But, so another something that we're doing at Bosma is we have recently started up Tech Tuesdays. And what Tech Tuesday is we know that there are folks out there who, you know, with some of the changes with vocational rehabilitation, with order of selection, it's a little harder to get into the vocational rehabilitation system anymore. And we know with the homemaker goals, it has changed, and that's no longer in effect. So it's harder for people to get some of the funding streams together to be able to receive training, especially in assistive technology. So what we've done is we've opened up our lab on Tuesday afternoons from 1:15 to 3:30. So I have a couple of instructors there, and they're ready to help anybody that wants to come in who's visually impaired and work on things like maybe you got a new smartphone. You want to learn how to use some of the functions on that, whether it's VoiceOver or some of the Zoom features, you know, or whether it's an Android or an Apple iPhone. You want to work on that, an iPad. Like to do some basic work on maybe working on emails or something on the computer. So we have opened that up as of June, and we're usually getting somewhere around 4 or 5 people at a time. And right now I have 2 instructors allocated to that time, and sometimes we have 6 to 8. It just depends on what the day's like. But if you're interested, you know, come in on a Tuesday. If you want to call ahead, you can certainly do that as well. Our telephone number is 888-567-3422, and that's 888-56-REHAB. For those of you who know what those letters are, I'm too old to remember those, but so 888-567-3422. So we'd love to see you there. And then another something that we have started recently is our Vision Rehab 101 group. And this is a group where it's a week-long training, and we bring in folks who, these are folks who haven't had the opportunity or to receive a comprehensive vision rehabilitation program. And, you know, maybe these are seniors or maybe these are folks who are homemakers and they don't really have any other kind of funding stream to get vision rehabilitation training. So what we've done is we've got a grant acquired through the Nina Mason Pulliam Charitable Trust organization. And they have allowed us to be able to serve 50 people throughout the state. So that's our goal this year, to serve 50 people in this program. And what we do is we bring people in for a week. Our next one's starting up on November 5th. And they'll come in. We put them up in a hotel. It's right near our center where our center-based clients stay. And we have a couple of orientation mobility instructors that are staying that week as well. So we're putting them up in the hotel. And they will have a week of, it's like a week of boot camp, baby. That's really what it is. It's a week where they're, every morning they start out the day, we put a cane in their hand, and we start working with them on orientation mobility for the first hour. And then they transition into some communication skills. We put a digital recorder in their hand. We do some work on the smartphones. We do some light manual skills kinds of things. And then in the evenings, one night we do a pizza party sing-along. Another night we go out to a restaurant. People have been choosing Ted's Montana Grill here lately. And so we take them out for that. We let them get some of those orientation and mobility skills into the restaurant. And then we also take them to an audio-described movie. And we just have a really good week. And let me tell you, just the training in and of itself, it's really good. It's 1 week. And so it's not as much as we'd love to be able to give them. But the other piece of it is, for those of you who have recently lost vision or lost vision as adults, or, you know how important it is to be around other people who are blind. When you've lost vision, and then you think you're the only one out there, and you think, oh, boy, my life is not going to be the same. It's over. And then you get around other people who are blind, you realize, oh, my gosh, life isn't over. It's just different. I have to do things differently. That's a huge battle, getting through that acceptance piece of losing one's vision. So I feel like, honestly, just that week of being around other people in that regard is really important. Oh, by the way, also in that week, we bring in Mr. Lee Martin and Florence McSwine to go over Newsline and National Federation of the Blind. So they are always there helping us out. So, like I said, November 5th is our next one. If you know of anybody that would be a good fit or interested, let us know. We still have about 4 or 5 openings for that. We try to have about 10 people in the class at a time. And we'll be doing those all throughout the this next fiscal year. So we'll be doing those up through June of next year. So, and then before I get ready to turn it over to Jeff Mittman, I'm saving the best for last here. I do want to tell you a quick little story here. And I know that Mr. Ron Brown has been talking about stepping back a little bit and out of the president role of the National Federation of the Blind. I'm not sure if that's happened or not, or if that's going to at some point in the future. I'm not aware at this point, but I want to tell you a little story. This is a Ron Brown story, by the way. And it's Gene's involved as well. So this is in 2010, and I want you to think about this. This is about a person. It's about a young mother who reached out to Ron and Jean. This is a young mother, 24 years old, had three kids, and three boys, ages 9 is the oldest, and 1 was the youngest. And she was living her life, working hard, hard-working young mother. And she, in January, started having some headaches and started having some difficulty seeing. Come to find out, she was having some fluid building up around her brain, her optic nerves. Then, so that was in January of 2010. And then in May of 2010, she went through a surgery, ended up losing all of her vision. So went from seeing perfectly in January to being totally blind by May. She said she went home. She got in the house, holding on to her husband. They're both young, you know. I know I kid around about being young, but I'm not young anymore. So I'm more compassionate than I've ever been. But she's very young, going in her house, and she says she is bald. She's like, how am I going to take care of these three young boys and being totally blind? And she was grieving and struggling, and she ended up hearing about the National Federation of the Blind, and called Ron. And Ron and Jean went out there to her house, and they started talking with her about, hey, life isn't over. Like I said earlier, it's not over. It's just different. You can still have a great life. You can do all kinds of things. They're living proof. They walk in that door and start working with her on orientation mobility, learn how to get around, start working with her on some Braille and learn how to organize things. You got three young boys. I can't imagine. I have one kid, and so the idea of three young boys, that's amazing. So anyway, they start working with them, and then I get a call from Ron. Ron says, James, we got to get this girl in. She's got these three kids. She can't, you know, she's struggling. You know, we've got her connected up with vocational rehabilitation. Can we get her in for a tour and get her in as soon as possible? She really, really needs it. And let me say this too, folks. It's not even a year since she lost her vision. So she's struggling, but she's also gotten hope. Hope a little quicker than some people do. Because most of the time, can I tell you, when people make it to our center, it's about 5 years down the road, or if not longer. Yeah, it can be even right. So it's a long time. So luckily, they met up with Ron and Jean. So we get them in for a tour. We're taking her around. And by the way, Ron brings her in. Ron brings her in for the tour. This is above and beyond kind of things, what a lot of folks will do. So he brings her in for a tour. We take her around, and she says to me, James, can I start next Monday? And I'm like, well, it doesn't happen quite that quick, but we'll get you in as soon as we can. So we got her in really probably about 5 or 6 weeks later. We got her in there. So I'm asking her, though, at this tour, I said, hey, you know, are you interested in going back to work? And she says, James, to be honest, I got to be able to take care of my boys first. I can't think about that right now. Which is, can I tell you, folks, when this homemaker goal was dropped through this whole thing with Wyoa, that's what bothers me. You can't even match your clothing, and somebody's going to say, you ready to go back to work? I mean, that's, to me, that just doesn't make sense. Once they go through a program, let me tell you, 95% of our homemakers who start in the program as homemakers, they become employment bound afterwards because they realize what they can do. They didn't know what they couldn't do. They got their confidence back. So anyway, she says that to me, and I said, okay. So then a week after she's been there, she's going around the center. And by the way, because of Ron, she had better O&M skills than most people when they first start out. she comes through, and she says to me, pokes her head in my office door, and she says, James, I want to go back to work. And I said, you do? And I said, that's great. Now let's get through the rehab first. Okay, I'm being a little, let's get through your rehab, get these skills together first. So she's working. She stays with us about 6 months. Every month, we have a meeting with all the teachers and the vocational rehabilitation counselor and anybody that the client feels is important, an important person, support person in their life. Guess who she invited every single time? Ron Brown or Gene Brown. I know they both were there. And so she's working on her GED as well as getting all these rehab skills together. And at the end of her program, she says, I'm ready for an internship, James. You going to have one for me? And I'm like, well, let's work on that. Let's get something together. Just so happened, Yellow Cab was doing some internships. And we have one of our instructors at the time who did some JAWS scripting out there, helped that system to become, you know, accessible. And then what they do is so we get her an internship there, and she's working with our instructors, working there. And she's very, I mean, this gal is outgoing. People like her. She's doing it. She's a call dispatcher at Yellow Cab. She was. And a pistol, someone said. That's a great description. She is. And so at any rate, 3 weeks later, the president of Yellow Cab calls me and says, James, I want to offer her a job. I'm like, you do? So I'm acting all like, well, we'll see. And, you know, I'm like inside, I'm jumping up and down. No, I'm like, yeah, we can make that happen, I'm pretty sure. So we got her connected up with Employment Services. She got a job, and she's back out there working and being able to take care of her kids. And then, folks, guess what? So I work late some nights, and a lot of my clients have my direct office line. So I'm there in the office about 7 o'clock one night, and I get this call, and I'm starting to talk to her, and she says, hey, James, guess what? And I said, what's that? She said, I passed my GED. And I'm like, you did? Awesome. And she says to me, she says, James, I really want you to come to the graduation. And it just happened to be a tough weekend for me because my son had another activity going and I wasn't able to make it. But guess who she says she invited as well? Mr. Ron Brown, yeah. So then, just one more quick thing about this young mother of three who became totally blind. She calls me a couple years after that on one of those nights when I'm in my office working late. Because let me tell you, folks, you guys know, you're working out there, the best time to get stuff done is when nobody else is around. Yeah. So she calls up, and we're talking, how are the kids? They're doing great. They're growing, all these things. And she says, you know, one of her dreams before she started our program is she wanted to buy a house and get those kids into a bigger house and a backyard and things. And she said, we're closing on a house in 2 weeks. And I'm like, that's what it's about. It's a village. It's a community. We all are in this together, and we're working together. So if there's anybody ever, you know, you ever want to know anything about any programs that we have, any services, we'll be happy to help you. I'll leave my card in the back, and I'll be willing to talk with you about any of the programs we talked about or anything of that nature. But anyway, whoever's going to be filling Ron's shoes, Ron and Jean's, let's put it this way, they got some big shoes to fill, but I'll tell you what, I've appreciated being a partner with you guys through the years, and I thank you so much. Yeah. Okay. Yes. Yeah, I will. Okay. Now I'm going to introduce our new chief operating officer at Bosma Enterprises. I met this gentleman about, I'd say, 10 or 11 years ago when he was doing a presentation. I'll let him tell about himself, but he lost his vision in Iraq. He's a veteran, and he's been with us now for 3 months. 3 months. He's got it all figured out now at Bosma, which is great. And he's a wonderful guy. His name's Jeff Mittman. So welcome, Jeff Mittman, please.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Mic right here.
Get out of your way.
Can I go behind you? Okay?
Sure. Sure. Well, good afternoon or good morning. I don't even know what time it is. Good morning. Yeah. Ron, thank you for having me here today. I appreciate it, sir.
Yes, sir.
I appreciate it. Now, I thought when James started talking about VHAG, I was going to have to get up here and apologize because In my 22 years in the Army, the A did not stand for audacity or audacious, right? It did not, yeah. It stood for something else I won't use here today. But thank you all for having me here. And we are especially proud of Bozeman to have James with us and the work he's doing over there. You know, when we place, it was 24 people, different organizations across the city of Indianapolis, not only are we employing people, but what we're doing is changing the perceptions of the capabilities for people who are blind or visually impaired. And that's especially important. And I always tell our employees and our team there that when we're out, we do a lot of traveling there quite a bit, actually. I'm always in an airport. I know James travels a lot. But as we're out and about, when we're in there, we never know who's watching and who's listening and who we get a chance to speak to. And when we're out and about like that, we're always representing Bozeman. And we're always representing the capabilities of people who are visually impaired or blind. So, James, we really, really appreciate what you're doing over there to change lives and change perceptions. So thank you. I'd like to just take a few minutes to talk to you a little bit about myself and how I came to Bozeman. As James said, I was in the Army for almost 22 years. I did 4 combat tours during that time. And I grew up, I was born and raised right here in Indianapolis, and I grew up, quite frankly, to be a little bit of an indifferent high school student. I could do well when I wanted, and when I didn't want to, I didn't worry about it too much. It was kind of whatever I wanted to do was okay. You know, I wasn't going to go to Harvard. All I had to do was get into college. And I got into college, and I went off, and I did my freshman year. And I did okay. Now, I didn't set the world on fire, but I did okay. And then one summer day, after my freshman year of college, I met an Army recruiter. He'd come over and started talking to me. And after I talked to him for a little bit, he told me, he said, "You know, I was hoping you had what it takes to be a soldier, but I just don't think you have what it takes." And I said to him, I said, "Man, I could be a soldier if I wanted to be." And he said, "No." He goes, "I don't think so." And he said, "If you think you got what it takes, come down to my office and talk to me." And I said, "I'll tell you what, I'll come down there and talk to you, but I'm not joining the Army." And I went down there and talked to him at his office, and about 5 minutes later, I joined the Army. And then he took me down to the end processing station. It used to be downtown Indianapolis, and I sat down with that recruiter there. And I talked to him for a few minutes, and after we talked for a while, he goes, "You know, when you sat down here, I was hoping you had what it takes to be an infantryman, but I don't think you have what it takes." Same pitch to me, right? Well, 5 minutes later, I was an infantryman in the United States Army. And I went off and I went to Fort Benning, Georgia, the basic training, the infantry school, and I went over to Germany for my first duty station. And about a year after I got there, the first Gulf War broke out. I found myself in the first Gulf War. And I rotated back and I was at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And then I went over to Korea. And then I came back to Fort Benning, Georgia. And this time when I came back, I was senior enough. I was a drill sergeant down at the Infantry Training Brigade. And I had the wonderful, wonderful opportunity to, every cycle, turn 55 great Americans into 55 great infantrymen every cycle and take them out there. And I absolutely loved the job. You know, I loved being the center of the action. I loved being there, the one making the decision, the one pushing them a little bit harder, the one trying to teach them what it takes to survive in combat. I was a straight-up evil genius when it came to training infantrymen. I loved it. And then, after that, I went back to Fort Campbell, and I became an infantry platoon sergeant. And outside of my wife and my children, my greatest accomplishment in life, my greatest honor, was I had a chance to take 2 different infantry platoons to 2 different wars and bring everybody back unscathed. It was absolutely the greatest honor of my life. But, you know, at the time, I thought I had a lot to do with that. I thought that it was because of my decisions. You know, everybody's coming to me for leadership. Everybody's asking me what to do. I thought it was really because I was that good. But I'll tell you what, a little bit after that, the Army asked me to go back. Actually, the Army didn't ask you to do anything. The Army told me to go back. And I went back to Iraq, and I did my forced combat tour. And this time, I was an advisor to an Iraqi unit. I was on an 8-man advisory team. And on the morning of July 7th of 2005, myself, four of my teammates, one of our interpreters, took off in a two-vehicle convoy to link up with our Iraqi brothers to go on a mission. Just so happens I was driving the second of those two armored Humvees. And we took off and we accelerated onto a highway. And we came to an overpass. And as we passed under the overpass and we came out the other side, boom, the enemy blew an ambush on us. And they initiated that ambush with an IED, an improvised explosive device, a roadside bomb that we know so much about these days. And that bomb threw, or that roadside bomb threw a projectile through the window of that up-armored Humvee I was driving. And it burned through that bulletproof glass, and it entered, and it came across my face. It went through the radios to my right, and it went out the armor on the other side of that Humvee. And it, when it went out the other side of that armor, it took with it my entire nose, my lips, my teeth, damaged my right arm, took the majority of my eyesight. And I woke up a month later at the old Walter Reed Hospital with my wife speaking to me. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure out what the hell she was doing in Baghdad. You see, my last memory was the 4th of July of that year. I was hit on July 7th. I woke up August 8th. And about that time, I had a friend of mine. About the time I woke up, I had a friend of mine that was injured not a mile from where I was injured. And he was injured by that same type of roadside bomb, and he had the same type of injuries. And when they brought him back to the States, they took him to, he didn't bring him to Walter Reed where I was, they took him to what was then known as the Bethesda Naval Medical Center, where the new Walter Reed is today. About 2 weeks after that, I was sitting in my hospital room, and my team of ophthalmologists came in to speak to me. You see, I've been awake long enough to come out of that fog of the month-long coma. They taught me how to speak. I had a tracheotomy, so I had that hole in my throat. They taught me how to speak with it, and I could communicate. And they knew I had some vision left, but they didn't know how much. So they got me in a wheelchair. They wheeled me down to the clinic, which was in the basement of the hospital there. The first doctor, the junior doctor, got me in the chair, the examination chair, and he'd come over and he spoke to me. He examined my eyes. And he went out in the hallway and had a conference with the other doctors. Then the next senior doctor came in, sat down, talked to me for a little bit, examined my eyes, went out to the hallway, had a conference with the other doctors. Then when the senior doctor came in to look at me, I knew I was in trouble. He came in, he sat down, he examined my eyes, and he laid back in his seat, and he let out this audible sigh, and he said, Jeff, he goes, I got to tell you, he goes, we've done everything we can, but we're not going to be able to restore any of your vision. He said, as a matter of fact, he goes, what you have now is all you ever have, and it might even get worse someday. We just don't know. About that time, my wife, Christy, had shown back up to the hospital. She'd been out helping another family of an injured soldier. Showed back up, found me down at the clinic, got me in my wheelchair, started to wheel me up to my room. And as she wheeled me up to the room, I began to cry. You see, for the first time in my life, I was 35 years old, for the first time in my life, I actually felt sorry for myself. I'd just been told I lost my vision. I didn't know anybody without vision. I knew there weren't any visually impaired people in the Army. I knew that. And I felt sorry for myself. And I began to cry. And we got up to my room, and Christy got me into the bed there, the hospital bed. She does this to this day. She took my hand, started to rub my hand, and talked to me to calm me down. And then the phone rang. And she picked up the phone. We were told that my friend had been hurt 2 weeks earlier, had died. And as she hung up the phone, I was hit by a second set of emotions. But this time, those emotions included sadness because my friend had died, and shame because I felt sorry for myself for losing my vision. You see, I was sitting there with all this commotion going on around me. I could hear the doctors running up down the hallways. I could hear the nurses coming out of the rooms. I could hear the patients talking to their families, and I could hear my wife sitting there speaking to me. You see, 30 minutes earlier, I thought I'd made some sacrifice in life because I'd given up my vision. But then I realized I hadn't sacrificed anything. I was still here. I was still alive. My friend's the one that paid the sacrifice. And at that point, I realized that I wasn't the center of the universe, and my vision wasn't that damn important. I could continue on with life. And I started to search out other organizations, and I came into contact with several of them over the years. One of them was NFB. I've had some contact and done some work with you over the years. The other was Bosman and Lou Moneymaker over there. About 6 years ago, asked me to be on the board at Bosman. Then about 4 months ago, he asked me to come on board as the COO, Chief Operating Officer, and run the day-to-day aspects of the business. And it's a great honor to be there, because what we're doing is providing opportunity for people who are visually impaired, allowing them opportunities that I had that maybe they haven't had. And one of the big things we're doing is what we're doing over there with James, the business side, helping support James and what he's doing to provide those opportunities for other people. And we're especially proud of that, changing those perceptions and changing those lives and navigating blindness. So I want to thank you all for having us here today. I think it's important that organizations work together to change those perceptions and change those lives. And we are eternally grateful for everything you do. So thank you so much for having us here. Ron, we're going to leave you with that. I just want to come by and say thank you for what you're doing. So thank you. Thank you.